Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show. In this session, I share my conversation with Rich Frangiello. Rich is the owner of Tenetrix, founder of the Franklin Soccer School Incorporated, and most recently, Downtown Sports. Our conversation was conducted via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. Rich and I had a great winding conversation covering a bunch of topics, including advice from his mother that he still lives by these days, in the development and management of his technology services company, and that informed the founding of the Franklin Soccer School and the expansion of Downtown Sports. As our conversation meandered, COVID-19 and life during the pandemic comes in frequently along the way, from dealing with uncertainty to developing services to meet current requirements, like the Smart Hoops program and the Monitored Virtual Learning program, and to the forthcoming business listening sessions. The show notes include links to Rich's businesses. Our conversation runs around 52 minutes, so let's listen to Rich and I talk about business development and life here in Franklin, Mass.
Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM on the internet anywhere you are, and on at 102.9 on the FM dial here in the Franklin local area. And today we've got Rich Frangiello. Rich, good afternoon and welcome.
Hello, thank you. Great to be here.
It is. It's always good to have a conversation, albeit socially distanced with this Zoom thing, whatever, you know.
That's right. We're not trying to get normal, we're trying to get better. That's what someone said. I like to think of that. So this is okay with me.
Develop whatever is going to be the new normal, because clearly now that the genie's out of the bottle, some of the things just, we're not going to go back.
Oh, that's
in some
right.
cases we shouldn't. Right. In some cases there's, you know, we're going to make things better. So let's just do it better going forward.
Yeah. Technology is a key piece of that, as people realize.
Yes.
That technology can be effective remotely and opens up the doors to other things like not driving to the office,
yes.
things like that.
Saving time to do other things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Spending
right.
time with family. And if I recall, you've got four, I think.
That's right. I've got four children, although the youngest is about to turn 20.
Yeah, so they're not children per se.
Right, yeah. They're moving along. So,
yes.
But yeah, we've got a lot of stories to talk about on a daily basis here, because everyone's been around because COVID has brought us together. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've seen Kobe a couple of times because he was expressing interest in one of the boards, and now he's getting involved, and that's goodness. It's good to see some of those younger folk, if you will, the generations behind us, not just, you know, do soccer things and other things, but actually get in to, you know, even the government as well.
Yeah, that's right. I agree. So he's got a master's in public policies, and he's here in Franklin, and so he wants to be involved and learn and show off his perspective, which I mm-hmm. think is different maybe than just people who have been around the town have been.
Right.
It's not a better or worse perspective, just a different perspective.
And I think that's one of the keys. It's not necessarily better or worse, but everybody that comes to the table has their own story.
Right. Right?
And there's value to that story, because there's, you know, it's the other adage, two heads are better than one. So there's another piece there.
I think, too, that the younger folks, if my kids are examples, are more in tune with some of the topical events of the day,
yes.
you know, the Black Lives Matter,
yes.
and COVID-related issues, health-related
sure.
issues, political issues.
Right.
They're all, you know, more communicative through social media and whatnot, that I think they were more in tune to sort of community and global issues than I was at their
mm-hmm.
age.
Yeah.
And I hope we can leverage that, because that has not been a traditionally, you know, tapped into demographic. And I think it's high time we do tap into it.
It is. Yeah.
There's something to it.
Absolutely. Yeah, things have been changing quite a bit along the way. And, you know, going back, I was preparing for this. I think we actually first met on a Franklin Youth Soccer Board or indoor at least meetings as my daughters were growing at the time. I was helping the youth soccer group. So I had like girls rec for a particular age group for a couple of years. And I think that's where, I know you still have soccer in your blood, so to speak, today.
I think that's fair to say it's in my blood. You know, when I got out of college in the late 80s and I moved back into my parents' house to save money to buy a house,
yes,
which is not how people think these days, but that's how I was thinking.
Right.
I had a couple of choices. I had an interest in scouting because I was a Boy Scout here in town and
okay.
Eagle Scout, and I liked that community.
Yep.
But soccer was a big part of my life, and I chose to volunteer. I went to my first Franklin Youth Soccer meeting, and next thing I know, I'm on the board of directors. And I think I had just turned 22, and here we are 31 years later. And yeah, still active on the youth board, and then it's grown. You know, soccer connects the world, and it's really proved that through me, the opportunities and the people.
Sure.
It's been tremendous. And then I'm sharing it with my children, and
right.
they share it with their friends.
Mm-hmm.
It's been fantastic ride. And so, it was unusual though, to be in the 90s in my 20s. I thought the rest of you were much older, but it turns out you weren't that much older.
No. Nope.
But just in different times of life, you know, you were.
Yes.
You were moving through with your children.
Yes.
And I didn't know anything about that at the time.
Yep. Yep.
And now we do.
Yes.
Yeah. So soccer's been huge.
it has, and I think at that time, certainly the mid-90s, you know, MLS started.
Right.
Gillette started, actually pre-Gillette
yep.
Stadium. They started in 96, and we started with the family six-pack, four-pack, whatever it was at the time. And then I remember clearly the Women's Gold Cup played some games in 98.
Right.
So
right.
we all went as a family, and that was amazing.
Yeah. No. For the first event was the 94 World Cup had –
right.
I think six games here,
right.
and that stirred things. But it's always been part of my life.
Right.
You know, people say to me even today, "Oh, this soccer thing's really catching on."
Like, well, yeah, it's been growing.
Yeah. Yeah, but the change in technology in television
yes.
has really helped, because it used to be, in order to be a big player, you had to get onto one of the networks
right.
and be seen.
Mm-hmm.
And soccer was never going to get to that point
right.
above the other sports. But now you've got a la carte cable and
sure.
such, so you can get to the markets that you want. And hey, there's plenty of big market for our sport. And,
yeah, and
I love all sports.
On, yeah, you know? And just briefly on the technology. I mean, now the technology on our smartphones, we can take video, post to YouTube, and scouts can see, et cetera. So that entire enabling and access, you know, you didn't have to be in the stadium to watch and see somebody. You could be
That's
almost
right.
anywhere.
It's true. And so my life has really been, if I look back, it's really been this balance of, you might say, academics and sports.
Mm-hmm.
And as I went forward, I did well in academics, but I also did well in sports. And then graduating into adulthood, I volunteered in sports. But I worked in technology
right.
and ended up starting a technology business and then a soccer business. So really, people ask me, "Oh, I haven't seen you. What have you been doing since high school?" And I pretty much say, "I'm doing the exact same thing I used to be doing, just a little more of it."
Just a little more of it. Yeah, so that was interesting because I had always thought you had done the soccer, Franklin soccer school first, but I guess Tinnitrix was first and then soccer came along.
Yeah, so I worked in industry in computer field
yeah.
for a big company, and then got my master's, and the company I was last working for was a startup
okay.
which sadly ran out of money.
Startups but, have a habit of doing that.
Yeah, well, it's actually a fascinating little business story, which I won't tell today, but
we'll come back and do that sometime.
All right, that's fine. The silver lining of it was I had gotten to a point where I was seeing much more of the business.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it folded, I was armed with more information.
Yes.
And it just became an opportunity that I seized. It was a little crazy if I think back on it, because all my children were under five.
Right.
I had four kids under five when I started. And yet it grew through referral. And yep. That was in 2001.
Wow.
So I'm coming up on my 20th anniversary of Tinetrix.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. And it's all been referral, which has been helpful.
You don't need to advertise if they do the advertising for you, right?
That's right. This is something I learned from my mother, who was a small business owner. When I was a kid, she started fixing people's clothes. She was a seamstress.
Seamstress, okay.
She called herself a dressmaker over the years.
Right.
Which had a nice polish on it.
Sure.
But she did that out of the house until I went to college. And then she worked at, you know this place. It's now Fiori.
Oh, yeah.
You know that building is right outside the mill store.
Right.
She used to have a business called the Little White House. And because it was a little white house.
Yes, it was at one point in time.
Yeah. And so she developed the most loyal clientele.
Yeah.
In a sort of a weird twist. Years after she had passed, people would call, not know that she had passed, and just call and say, right. Hey, I've got some pants that need hemming.
She was always the good fixer for that.
Yeah. So she filled a role, and she didn't ever advertise. It was just
do
good work
right.
and treat people with respect.
Yes.
And they will just naturally tell people, because you're like a friend.
Yes.
You're not like a vendor.
Right.
And I try to keep that same mentality. I want to be part of people's staff,
mm-hmm.
not someone that they're looking to avoid.
Yeah, not just the partner at arm's length, but
right.
roll up the sleeves, sweat in, get in there, do what
exactly.
you need to do together. Yes.
Yeah. And what Tinetrix does is supports very small business. So I really get to work with people who are passionate about their business.
Yes.
But they don't have a technology person on staff.
Right.
And yet, as everyone is coming to realize, we're relying on technology.
Very critical. Yes.
Yeah. So accountants and attorneys and
mm-hmm.
professional people, but I run the gamut of manufacturing and nonprofits, and it's been great, because then I learn about people, I learn about business.
Right. And then every once in a while they'll ask you something. Well, I've done this, but not that. So then you can go and broaden your own depth.
It's a very astute observation, because that part is cool for me.
Yes.
You know, most days the issues, technologically speaking, could be mundane, but someone's always pushing the envelope, and I want to come and help them.
Right.
So I'm learning about new things, and that keeps me fresh and having fun, and we might as well have fun.
Absolutely. That's what I've heard. People ask me, are you going to continue Franklin Matters forever? I said, well, as long as I learn something and as long as I can continue to do so and still have fun doing it, then why not?
That's right.
Absolutely. We connect definitely on that spot. So I totally agree with your approach.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And technology lends itself well to that, of course,
yes.
because now we're doing Zoom. Well, now I'm talking to my 86-year-old aunt on a weekly basis through Zoom.
Sure.
This was something that she didn't know about, but now it's becoming commonplace. And so many examples, you already mentioned about smartphones, and it's just a tremendous number of examples.
Yeah.
And I like to teach, which has been good for the coaching side, but on the technology side, I try to tell kids that it's a tool.
It is a tool.
It's not a game.
No.
It's a tool. Powerful tool. That we've been able to.
Every problem can't be solved with a hammer.
That's
you
right.
need a toolkit. And these days it's more like, well, maybe it's Word, maybe it's Zoom, maybe it's Skype, maybe it's some other tools.
Yeah, right? That's right.
Technology tools. Yeah.
And I hope that it continues to extend that way. I think it's really, we're gonna go through a big shift here through COVID. Thanks to technology, maybe.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think we will. There's still things that we're learning, clearly, as even to what you had mentioned before. COVID certainly exposed a lot of our community and culture or fault, if you will. There's gaps. People don't have technology. People don't have access to technology. Not everybody has broadband. You know, how do you solve that unless they've got a paycheck to kind of support that? So there are going to be some big issues that we're still going to have to work through.
Yeah, you're right about that. We are very fortunate here that we can look to technology. A high percentage of our community does have it, and it creates opportunities that aren't true just down the street. And, you know, I think we can't forget that.
No.
You know, it used to be that we would say, well, you got to anticipate the lowest common denominator. And in Franklin, the lowest common denominator for a good percentage of the population is very blessed to have resources to do some things.
Absolutely.
But not everyone does, as you point out.
No.
Yeah.
No. So let's go back to soccer, because soccer school and the growth of that certainly has happened over time.
Yeah. So I was involved in soccer, you know, BC, that is.
BC.
Before children.
Before children, not just before Corona, before children.
Before Corona, that's right. So I had, you know, when you're 22, I had things that probably you did not have at the time, which is time.
Yes.
You know, you didn't have time to spend, but I did. And so I got heavily involved and I loved it. I enjoyed working with kids and getting to know families. And so that grew. So I volunteered a ton. And in that process, I got better at coaching and got into coaching. All the while, I was also officiating. I've been refereeing since I was a teenager.
Ah, okay.
So two paths really helped. and playing, of course. I was still playing. I still play. So it's really been great fun. But there got to be a point where I just could not volunteer anymore.
Yeah.
It was becoming a burden on the family, the kids.
I was going to say, for those who are listening, if they haven't already caught on, well, you started Tinnertrix when you had, or at least your youngest was less than five, and then you're doing the volunteering. At some point in time, you know, you need more to continue to help supporting the growing family.
It's true. I loved it, and I still volunteer a ton, but we had an opportunity. I met up with a lot of great people, but one in particular, Kevin Sayward, who was very like-minded. We noticed that on the soccer board. We worked together and, you know, now we parlayed that synergy and philosophy into a school. And the way that started was my son at the time was being asked to play indoors with a team over at one of the facilities. And honestly, I'm a frugal guy. I don't know if you know that. I'm a frugal person.
Right.
So it just didn't seem to make sense to me to have twice as many players as you needed to play the game, go play for more money than needed to be spent, and you could not actually train because the acoustics of the building were such that you couldn't hear.
Right.
So even if I saw things that I thought needed to be corrected, it was impossible to communicate. Anyway, I thought there was a better model. And the model I suggested to my son, which caught on, was, hey, how about you invite 10 of your friends? We'll go rent a space and we'll make up our own teams and we'll at least play for the entire hour, even if I say nothing.
Sure.
We double our money.
Yep.
And so that's how it started. We rented space over in Norfolk and it grew and some friends of friends grew. And next thing I had age groups more than just my son, but my son and my daughter, other son and their friends. And it got to the point where I couldn't manage that either.
Yeah.
So I asked Kevin to help and lo and behold, that was the seeds that planted Franklin Soccer School. And then it grew further because the space over on Cottage and Saxon, where we do our indoor training.
Carpe Diem Field.
Carpe Diem Field, yep. So that building was purchased by a great friend and the most generous man in town, I dare say, is a guy named John Berg. And John and I met through our children.
Yep.
His boys and my boys were pals. And he was starting a company called Carpe Diem Technologies.
Okay.
And he needed a place to to store his equipment. I helped him connect with a friend who had some equipment, blah, blah, blah. Fast forward, he buys the building, and in the back is this storage space, this warehouse space that he and I walked in the dark with flashlights, and he says, "What do you think?" I said, "Oh, we can definitely train in here." And so his generosity led to the building of Carpe Diem Field, which he always thought of as a gift to the community.
Yeah.
He didn't look at it as a profit center. He just wanted a place for his sons and his friends to play. And that was, I was right on board with that, you know. So we started offering low cost classes in that space, and that was in, we played our first game there in May 2006. And so when that building was purchased, Kevin and I decided that we should establish more formally Franklin Soccer School, so that there was not going to be a conflict of interest with Franklin Youth Soccer and our relationship with John, the building owner. So we felt like it was important to be a separate entity so as not to presume that people would just come because we were on the soccer board. And yeah, so that was 2006. And it grew and it was great.
And then Aubuchon moved on, and you got some more space in the next building or the same building. And now soccer school expanded to downtown sports.
That was, that's still a work in progress, of course, but that was a nice opportunity. We got to expand. We wanted to expand our soccer school into different surfaces in the soccer community. Futsal is a good way to develop. And futsal is a, it's just a faster surface. So it forces people who are trying to control a slippery ball on a slippery surface with their feet. You got to get good.
You got to be better.
Otherwise the ball goes by. And, and so we saw it as an opportunity to expand our school, but also I have an interest in basketball, and Kevin has an interest in basketball and all sports, but I think there's a real opportunity in basketball. We can talk about that if you like. But anyway, we built out a court. So we have a court and a field, and that I think we opened in early 2018.
It's been a couple of years.
So we're hoping to, well, we were hoping to get into the black at some point, but then
COVID came along. Kind of put a nice wrinkle into your plans.
You know, we had done a fair bit of planning, but no small business expects their income to drop to zero for an undetermined amount of time. And we understood it, but it definitely was a bump in the road. And truth be told, Steve, we would not be in business if not for John Berg and as a landlord. He seemed to recognize just naturally that it's better for both of our businesses to be alive when we get to the other side of the river. And we don't know how wide the river is, but let's work on trying to get ourselves across. And so his flexibility really just made it possible. And now we're reemerging, and hopefully things continue on an uptick.
right,
in terms of people's comfort.
Yes. Yeah, that's going to be key because, and I think you may have seen recently, we've been on an unfortunate trend of gradually increasing our numbers here, specifically in Franklin. Not a whole lot, but just a little bit at a time. And yeah, we've gone from like 7 or 8 now to 16, I think it was this week. And clearly that's a worrisome trend, especially with schools going back in, or right, some school actually operating, you know, in person with, you know, the high needs, the special ed, et cetera. And then they will be hybrid eventually, grade by grade as Franklin phases their process in. And
right,
yeah, that's a major concern, clearly.
Yeah. And the uncertainty is really,
yeah,
really very crippling because you just don't know what's coming down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So when we started, you know, soccer people, we became part-time meteorologists because now we can look at the Doppler ourselves on the internet and decide, oh, is it going to clear up by 5:15? But now we've added into our bag of tricks, we're becoming sort of scientists,
mm-hmm,
and I'm looking at the COVID
right, what are the numbers tell us going to happen
every
next
day?
Week?
Yeah, you know, it's sort of crazy. We're looking at, well, just take last week, you know, I mm-hmm coach a team.
Sure.
That was supposed to play a team in Rhode Island.
Right.
And, well, that's a red zone from Massachusetts standpoint.
Yeah.
So we can't play. So we can play, but we can't play this week because of that.
Right.
And you know, we've got a team who's supposed to go play a team in Everett. Well,
mm-hmm,
they're
Everett's
red
in
zone,
a very hot zone in Mass. Yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Dedham, which is now closer to home, right?
Yes. Yes.
Is, and they've been
red
for a couple
of
weeks.
Yeah, they just tipped. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so I don't want to be a kid in this, do you?
No.
What's
well,
going
and going
on?
Back to the coaching and the teaching, that affects the processing because you set out a plan, you start working the plan, the kids get into the routine, and then things change.
Yeah.
And
right,
that it's not just change on your side, it's changing the process, changing the kids, and yeah, then throw in the uncertainty. It's like, help.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder what the effect is going to be with kids
right
going forward.
True.
And they look back on this period.
Yeah.
Pretty resilient kids are, aren't they?
Well, I think people are generally as well. Clearly, the older you get, the more set in the ways you may be. So there's maybe some less of that. But I think there was a quote, and actually it came, I think, from one of the school committee meetings. You know, there are, you know, programs to deal with resiliency and recovery for kind of mental illness and mental problems.
Mm-hmm.
There's no recovery program yet from death.
Right.
Which, yeah, so
please
now
make
we
a
have
note
to
of it.
I'm going to go this way. I'm not going to go that way.
Yeah. Yeah. In the COVID times, for me, it's a blessing to be out and playing. You know, really,
oh,
I feel
sure
very fortunate, and I treat it that way.
Yep.
And our message to the families that we're dealing with this, look, we don't want to endanger your child.
Yep.
And so, but yet we see there's opportunity here to get exercise and socialize, and
mm-hmm,
that's all important for children. And in soccer, anyway, we're trying to get away from the opponent. You know, we're not trying to get too whack into the opponent.
Yeah.
And so the game sort of lends itself to a certain level of safety that I think works. You know, it can
sure
work. It can
yeah
be made to work.
Yeah.
And so that's the path we're going on. And but it's different indoors, right? So we've got now an indoor facility,
mm-hmm,
and we're dealing with what will the state allow us to do? What can we physically do in our space? And then what are parents willing to
true
tolerate yeah and accept this risk?
How much can you do as an organization, business, with your space without breaking the bank, because you're already on kind of margin as it is,
right,
that will create that confidence in the parents of the kids to come in and say, yeah, we can do this. Yeah, that's going to be a tough decision.
What we've chosen to do, sort of looking at the local and state national models, it seems that you can't over communicate
right
what you're doing
right
because it it shows what is true, that we're concerned. We're paying attention to the little details that you would want us to be paying attention to for the safety of your children. And then we're doing all those things, right? So now we're experts in disinfectant and
sanitizers.
Yeah. And spacing and density and, in a weird sort of way, the schools being where they are creates a little bit opportunity for us with an indoor space because we're independent.
Right.
And I'm not saying I would want this trade-off in the grand scheme of things, but it does give us an opportunity to provide some services for families that might have otherwise gone to the school.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're coming to our place, and that is we're privileged to have that opportunity. It kind of helps us stay alive, honestly.
Yes.
And so some things like a lot of the basketball programs would be using school gyms, but they're not available to them right now.
Sure.
So we're able to offer some things with all the protocols.
Correct.
Another program that just started with us yesterday, because school started yesterday,
right,
is we're running a program we call MVP.
I was just noticing the link on the page. Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. So monitored a virtual learning program that we are giving families a place to bring their child, get online, go through their schooling, and when they have a break, they can go shoot the basket, or they can go run around and have an indoor space. That's
some real activity to help them while they're sitting, Zooming in the meantime.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And for some families, this is really critical, right? I'm sure you've heard.
Well, especially in a technology world, we know that, you know, we're in our office, but in some families, they've got the two or three kids potentially on the same table, and that's not going to work.
That's right. So when I started my technology business in town, teaching a four-year-old the difference between daddy needs the door closed because you need to stay out and daddy's got the door closed and I'm coming in anyway. That's real life to many, many more people these days.
Yes.
And I can imagine that some conversations were, hey, honey, it'll be all right in September when the kids go back, only to find out they weren't really going
back.
So I'm excited about that program because I can just see that for some families, this is really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's opportunity there. Volleyball, which is a moderate level sport, is something that we really got off the ground in.
Well, good, because that too, I think, is one of the ones that can move to what they call that fall two, at least from a Franklin perspective.
That's right. Their season got shifted. And so we can help with training.
Right.
We've got the ability to have two courts.
Space.
Yeah. And also the time of day. Because the school system is a little bit different, we can sort of mix and match with student schedules.
Yes.
So blocks of time here and there. So we're trying to provide service, but we're trying to stay alive too, quite honestly.
Right. Take advantage of the opportunities that are there to maintain some stability, some balance, and provide, you know, to your point, going back to, you know, if you create that trust and the word of mouth and then deliver, people will keep coming back.
That's right. And I'm sure you've run into folks who run the spectrum of sort of tolerance, risk tolerance, you know, some who are, you know, I don't care, it's not even a real thing anyway, to I'm not going to leave the house and everything in between.
Correct.
You know, wearing a mask has almost become a political statement these days, sadly.
It's unfortunate. It's a health statement, not a political statement, but some people don't take it that way. I understand.
That's right. But we think of it as we're a service organization, and if we can help some families and their needs align with our needs, then That's a good thing. I'm sure you can appreciate, there's nothing more gratifying for someone who likes sports to watch kids play. Mm-hmm. Just sort of get into their world of play.
Yeah. Yep.
Which you and I did at the park down the street.
Yep.
Or at the local school without mom and dad watching.
Mm-hmm.
Something magical about that. And
yes,
you know, our days with kids in our building, just making up their own rules and breaking them and mm-hmm. arguing about them.
And then fixing their own issues. That's
them.
The key piece there,
that's
I
great.
Think. That's kind of, you know, we take it natural because we did it forever. So you were the last one picked, you figure it out, right?
Right.
You either get
right.
better so you don't get the last one picked, or you just choose another sport.
Exactly. And your kids are very in tune with justice.
Yep.
They're very in tune with a fair play. That doesn't mean that they are always following lines of justice or playing fair, but they're very aware of it.
Well,
and so that keeps things in bounds.
I think the key, one of the key concepts is, and you probably agree with it, the lines, right? We always like to kind of push to the line, but we need to know that playground space mm-hmm. that we're within, and that's where we can be creative. And then you have to bump against it once in a while. And then clearly, if you're going to go over the line, that's when somebody says, no, 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 come back.
Yeah, that's right. And this is why our indoor space has been great for me, because it really is cool to see that we've got a safe place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it used to be the park down the street was the safe
right.
place.
Wide open. Yep.
But that's changed, and we can acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm.
But so now we can have people come in, and the bounds of what is safe are well-defined by
mm-hmm.
walls.
Sure.
You know, they still push the envelope, you know. It's
yeah.
like, no, you can't hang on that, you can't do that. But otherwise, it's really quite a nice laboratory for watching social interaction and growth.
Mm-hmm.
And that is pretty cool.
Yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
So that's been fun.
And from a growth perspective, I believe you're interested, particularly for because of the crossing area that you're in, particularly in like the economic development study and the listening sessions that are coming, because it'll create more awareness for the community of what you're doing, but then also create more awareness for you. What else is out there that you may be able to tap into, right? Or am I?
No, you got it right.
Okay.
As the pandemic or the shutdown, the stay in place orders were
right.
put in place, there was this approach to, was it Arts Week or
yes.
there was an event that was being planned
mm-hmm.
and there was an opportunity for some of the businesses right on the Union Street, Carter Street area that we're looking now to collaborate to
yes.
say, hey, yeah, we exist, we're neighbors. And,
yes.
And I think there's a real opportunity down in that space. There's a lot of life down there.
There is.
You've got Mel Hamlin and Neil's there. Agway is
yep.
there. And the Mill Store has been there. And
sure.
then, you know, you've got Acapulco's there. And we're there. And in the middle of that, you've got Bob Bozzella's La Cantina.
La Cantina.
Is there.
And
there.
Got,
and,
it's a density of pizza places.
That's
I think
right.
there's
George's.
What, four or five.
Yeah.
You got George's 360, and you got the other place right at the corner of Washington. Going
Andros.
Up. Andros.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of activity there. But the thing that really gets me excited about this is the possibility of extending the rail trail.
Yes.
Up
That's
into.
Yeah.
Into that space. You know,
mm-hmm.
Are you a bicyclist or a walker?
I was a longtime runner. That's another story. But currently walking, and I do a lot of reporting by walking around. But yeah, I've been following the rail trail for a good long time, and especially now with the tunnel through Prospect almost complete.
Yeah.
That'll be great. And yeah, to get that last maybe mile from, you know, Grove down to Union.
Yeah,
it's still active it's because there's a spur, I believe, in
there
the
is.
Forge Park industrial area that they're still using. Not heavily, but they are still using it.
It seems like there's an opportunity there. You know, when the rail trail committee got started, I don't know if you
mm-hmm.
dug into that story, but Dave Labonte.
Dave Labonte, I know him well.
So he's was very active in the, and is still involved in Oddfellows Hall.
Yes, yes.
And so I coached Danny and Julia's children way back when.
Yeah, soccer has all connections, of course.
Soccer connects everything. If I didn't say that earlier, soccer connects everything. So Dave and I had some conversations about that when he was looking to do some service work. And he was a cyclist, is a cyclist. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I do, among my things for Tenetrix, I do web hosting and web development. And so I built a site for them early on, and I still host their website. Anyway, so I've been interested in this for a long time.
Sure.
And you had to be interested for a long time because the funding for that tunnel took a long time.
Yes.
But anyway, what I wanted to say about it was his turning me on to the rail trail community, if you will, is fantastic. If you go out to the rail trail in Blackstone out towards Douglas, that stretch, it's pretty cool to be riding along, and there's an ice cream stand on the trail,
mm-hmm.
or there's a bench looking out over some water, or a restaurant, mm-hmm. or a gift shop, or whatever. There's opportunity for business accessible by
rail,
bicycle.
And you may have seen it. If you haven't, I would suggest it. East Bay, from like East Providence down to Bristol.
Oh yes.
And going through Bristol, there's an ice cream stop there.
There is. We've done that. We've done that route. I forgot that was called East Bay, but that's a great route.
It is.
It takes you into community and out of community.
Yep.
And not everyone wants to ride for 50 miles through a cornfield for the love of the sport.
Yeah.
But I think a lot more people would get out walking or riding. Well, you've already seen it, right? Right around town.
Absolutely.
Through COVID.
Yep. And what a heck of a lot more people on the streets, whether onesie, twosie, which is fine. But there's definitely a whole lot more people on the streets. I'm still the only one, I think, on a rainy day, but that's okay.
But doesn't it feel good, though, from a community standpoint to see your neighbor out?
Absolutely. Yeah, and especially in the early days, and you probably saw it as well, you'd recognize your neighbor, you were on the same side of the street, and then she would cross, or he would cross, or you would, you'd almost have like a negotiation, I'll go this way, you go that way.
Yeah, we'd get a laugh out of it, which was great.
Right.
And I think the same thing would be true in the case of if you extend the rail trail up to Franklin, in terms of development for small business, if someone from a next town could shoot over and get mm-hmm. something.
Yeah.
Just recently, maybe 2 weeks ago, my daughter and I rode from Uxbridge back home through the rail trail system.
Sure.
And I'm not in the tremendous shape, but I could do it.
Yeah.
It was a blast.
Excellent.
And I could, that really helped me envision that I could ride to Blackstone and visit my favorite restaurant, and that's a doable thing on a bike. That's pretty cool.
Back in my college days, I went from Pawtucket to Worcester, 45 miles or thereabouts to Assumption, and generally did it one way at a time, but there was one weekend when I did it back and forth. So yeah, I've done, that's probably the longest ride I've done. But at some point in my lifetime, to be able to leave Franklin, go out to the Worcester, 10-mile or Blackstone Valley Trail, actually what it is, and then go left and go down into Pawtucket, potentially then pick up the East Bay and go all the way to Newport, wouldn't that be a thing to do?
that is pretty cool. And we just went from Blackstone down to Central Falls.
Yes.
And stopped in at there's a Portuguese club there.
Of course,
my wife's heritage, and then an ice cream shop right next door. So it all worked out.
Well, and you went by the Lonsdale Drive-In as you went through there.
That's correct. That's exactly right.
So you could still reopen that. Drive-ins are coming back, I think, these days because of the social distancing. So
peddling? No, it wouldn't be a drive-in. It would be a peddling.
Peddling, yes. You know, combine the two, of course. Definitely.
I'm talking about ice cream, but you know, the thought of getting ice cream with another 10 miles to ride, I couldn't do it. I had to say no to that. But
yeah. Well, the other biking trip that was dangerous was when we went up, we did a during the summer a few years ago, we went up to Niagara Falls and did the bike trail on the north side, Canadian side, in among the vineyards. So you go to a tasting and then an next one to a tasting. That can get dangerous.
That could get dangerous indeed.
Yes.
Yeah, but I think that Bob at La Cantina would be happy to offer up something, you know.
Right, right.
A shot of something for, you know, a bicyclist going through.
Absolutely.
But we'll have to see how that goes. I know that it's not just me who's interested. So I hope that it has some legs.
Yeah. And the first session, if I recall, is like September 30th. And there's a series, kind of one a month. I anticipate those discussions. They should be interesting in the meeting, but I'm going to be interested in looking at some of the side conversations that come out of those, because to your point, you get to something and then you walk away and then some of your thoughts are still going on. And then all of a sudden say, well, wait a minute, Rich said this, maybe we can do this. And then they'll come back to whether you or somebody else. And, you know, things just, the serendipity of what can come out of that is just, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing that because I think there's a great deal of opportunity.
I think our Shop Franklin and downtown partnership has done a nice job of creating an environment where those discussions can happen. And and honestly, I think the town has improved in this area.
Yes.
In that they're open to dialogue in new ways and getting perspectives proactively, not reactively.
Yes.
I think your role in town is testament to that. Your sharing information was sort of a side thing, but now it's seen as a valuable thing and an imperative. Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I remember when I first met Jamie, he said, well, I'm going to plan on doing stuff. And I said, don't worry about putting me out of a job. You can do all the basics, you know, get the agendas out, get the minutes out, get the other pieces out, and then I can go do some analysis and some other reporting. Don't worry about it. So I'm glad that he gets the social need of meeting the different markets, the youth market. Even the elderly are now getting in some ways into different technology, social medias, et cetera. And that's a good way to create, whether it's an artifact of a piece of paper, and then now you've got more info, whether it's, you know, the downtown partnership or the listening sessions or, you know, the cultural district and what's happening, or certainly sports, which is part of our conversation here.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. They're all there.
When I started volunteering, you had to deal with, well, they're still there, these rules of posting minutes.
Yes.
You were required to post minutes. Mm-hmm. Well, posting minutes on a bulletin board outside the town hall is not going to reach as many people as what you do and what the town is expanding to do and websites. Mm-hmm. And by notifying people, I think there are people who are interested in participating, whether it's voicing an opinion or actually stepping up and do things. Just in the Black Lives Matter group, there's a Facebook group, Franklin Area Against Racism.
Right.
You know, one of the people who started that was 23. Right? Yep. He's my son's classmate.
Sure.
And he's having an impact on his community.
Absolutely.
Through that.
Yeah.
And it's those sorts of avenues that are quite exciting through technology.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of where you stand on on the topic and how anyone feels about this or that.
Right.
I think everyone should at least recognize having more voices is probably going to provide a better product of decisions, because you know, everyone's getting a little bit of representation. Correct. We hope.
And it, from experience, and you would probably agree, I don't want to presume that, but when you put together a proposal, the more of that networking, the buy-in that you can do beforehand, before actually making the final presentation, then should make that final presentation a lot easier. Because you've built those relationships, you've had those discussions before it finally comes to the point where, yeah, I like it or I don't. And maybe you still get some questions, but they should be a little bit easier questions, as opposed to, where did that one come from?
Yeah, right. That's right. And when you haven't heard about it in advance,
then you feel left out. How come?
It feels like an affront. And it's easy to presume that the most evil intent.
Conspiracy around the corner.
Right. And so that no one likes that. And
no.
So I do think that we continue to have opportunity there. And I've said this to you in person many times, but I think your role, your self-appointed role, has been invaluable in that regard, because it's not judgmental. It's just, here's some information. And I think that more people with information, we hopefully will end up with a better result of whatever it is we're trying to accomplish.
That's certainly the goal, and thank you. I appreciate that. And hopefully the listeners will agree or disagree, but at least we'll know what we're agreeing and disagreeing on.
Yeah, well, I think the listeners will agree, because they've come to understand that you're bringing something of value to the to the town. And one thing about Franklin and growing up here, it's changed a lot. Oh, you're from Franklin? You know, people ask me, oh, you grew up in Franklin? Yeah, I grew up in Franklin. It's not the same town.
No.
That I grew up in, but it's still a good place to raise a family,
and it's
still a good place to find community.
Correct.
And the railroad and the highway attract some folks who seem to appreciate those sorts of things.
Absolutely.
And and so I hope that we continue to reap the benefits of that.
And work to make sure that those benefits still improve over time.
Yeah, that's right. And I think there's a lot of energy in doing that.
Yeah, definitely.
Going forward. Yeah.
Well, thank you. This I have thoroughly enjoyed. Hopefully the listeners will enjoy as they take this journey with us as well.
Good.
Thank you for your time today, and I'm sure we will be in touch.
Well, I appreciate your reaching out, and I'm sure, indeed, we will see each other soon. Best to you.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.